This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the morning run continues. Tan Chung Han and myself, Sharad Kutin. It's coming up to 7:48 in the morning. It's the 13th of April. A quick reminder, after the 8 o'clock bulletin, we'll have the breakfast grill. Melissa Idris spoke to Christian Riker.
Riker, I guess.
Royke,
you're going to ask a boy from Klang how to pronounce his Scandinavian name. Thanks a lot, buddy.
He's the managing director of IKEA Southeast Asia. This was recorded before Melissa left for her break.
And apparently it is now official. It is pronounced as IKEA, not IKEA, right? I think that has been that will be clarified.
I don't know, I don't know. I'm waiting for this breakfast. So if you wonder the mysteries of pronouncing the many unpronounceable product names as well, you can know that. Because more seriously, Melissa addresses the question of how important Southeast Asia is to IKEA's market, to IKEA as a market, and also how this global brand is fitting into this particular segment of their market. So all these questions up on the breakfast grill after the 8 o'clock bulletin.
Have you been to IKEA recently, Sharad?
Not recently, but I've shopped there. I mean, it's a lot of practical stuff, so, you know.
Yeah, and every time I go there, it's just packed. Either Malaysians just love walking around and testing out their beds and, I don't know, enjoying the meatballs. Maybe not at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. There is the experience as the stores, but you know,
it's always packed though. It's always packed.
I think with you know, for myself, Han, I think it's important. Like your one's portfolio, one should always be diversify one's retail experience. So you know, not to get caught up in one aesthetic, because there is an aesthetic that IKEA has sold to the world, and you might buy into it. You might buy into it in parts. There's some practical matters. But I think diversity is the name of the game.
And certainly, you know, and when you consider, you know, how successful IKEA has been in the ASEAN market, or certainly all over the world, where their brands are often the first thing that comes to mind when, a young couple buys their first home and they think of furnishing, you know, they think of IKEA. But I'm sure there are challenges in that space as well. So very much looking forward to what the grill has to offer in about 10 minutes or so.
Okay. Now we look at a study by McKinsey. According to the study, the return on investment in Malaysia's capital markets between 2008 and 2015 was lower than the risk taken. Malaysia had a sharp ratio of some 0.6, and that is a reading, as it were. A sharp there is S-H-A-R-P-E, is a sharp ratio. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can explain what that is.
All right, so basically a sharp reading of below 1.0 indicates that the return of investment is less than the risk taken. So I guess, to put it in layman terms, not really worth it, lah. Okay, depending on your risk appetite. Now, so when I was going through this McKinsey study here, the media report on that McKinsey study, I find it quite interesting. You know, so basically they calculated the risk-adjusted return, you know, the average return versus, you know, the risk-free appetite. I know that's a bunch of jargon, but essentially, according to this study, from 2008, that's during the global financial crisis, till 2015, the returns on investment in Malaysia is lower than the risk. But again, I love giving context. So to put it in perspective, we actually outperformed some advanced economies like the UK, like Australia. We also advanced, we also fared better, at least our returns on investment were still better than the likes of India, China even, right? Of course, but at the top of the list, you've got the Philippines and the US, Thailand and Indonesia and Singapore as well. So our ASEAN neighbors are very much of, at least according to this McKinsey study, offering better returns on investment versus the kind of risk. But then I decided to take it one step further and just look at other indicators here, because, you know, really, how bad was it between 2008 and 2015? So let's look at Malaysian equities, okay, Malaysian stocks, for example. After that GFC, that global financial crisis, you know, say, you know, take the first quarter of 2009, all the way to the end of 2015, which is what this study is about. Yeah, this is in the past, not moving forward. This is what happened from 2008 to 2015. During pretty much that same time period, do you know how much the FVM KLCI rose?
I don't know, Han. Tell
91%. 91%.
That's okay. Significant, isn't
it? That's huge.
That's close to doubling.
Yes, well done. Pretty good. So 91% gains on FBM KLCI. Now, if you look at, say, the foreign ownership of Malaysian bonds, that nearly doubled from 2011. That's the earliest data that we got from Bank Negara. 2011 to 2014. It went from about 130 billion to over 240 billion, in the third quarter of 2015. So pretty much during that time, you've got more foreigners lapping up Malaysian bonds. Talk about credit default swaps. Credit default swaps is a fancy way of saying that's an insurance policy that investors get on their investments on Malaysia's, right? Now, that peaked during the GFC, I mean, understandably so, but then it came down sharply and remained stable all the way until the end of this study, and then before spiking again at the end of 2015. Some market commentators say that may have been due to the 1MDB saga. But during the period of this study, though, credit default swaps, in other words, how risky are Malaysian investments, that came down significantly. If you're going to use another indicator, you got the ringgit there. It was range-bound from about 3 to 3.2 against the US dollar, before falling sharply beginning the second half of 2014 to where it is now, 4.4. Right? So you've got other indicators that perhaps suggest otherwise to what this McKinsey study is saying. Although, I mean, to be fair, obviously they've got a lot more resources and brain power than I've got.
I think that modest, your modesty is well appreciated. But yesterday we were speaking about the sell-off on Malaysian bonds, and there was a sharp contrast with equities. So there was a rush to buy Malaysian equities, correct, while at the same time there was a greater sell-off in terms of bonds.
Yeah, I guess you could. One of the key factors that investors often cite is the risk off or risk on sentiment. We have been seeing a lot of inflows into the debt space, that's bonds, in the likes countries like Thailand, India, for example, and that's cited by our UOB economist Julia Goh. But at the same time, when you look at our bond space, Malaysian bonds in particular, the sell-off was very significant in the last quarter of 2016 and very much pronounced last month. So right now, as it stands, foreign ownership of Malaysian bonds at its lowest since early 2012. Now, you read into that what you will, and how we stack up against other emerging markets. But when you contrast that, again, and I'm trying to give context here, when you contrast that with, say, the equity space, you're actually seeing over 6 billion ringgit worth of Malaysian stocks net bought by foreign investors. They're coming back in, versus the 3 billion ringgit worth of net Malaysian stocks net sold last year. The year prior, 2015, about 14 billion, or somewhere in the teens, a billion of ringgit worth of Malaysian stocks net sold by foreign investors. So, again, you're seeing these kind of contrasting fund flows, and again, going back to this McKinsey study, this was in the past, 2008, 2015. Now moving forward, it'd be interesting to keep track of some of the latest fund flows and see where we go from here.
Also in the news, RHB has signed a partnership with Funding Societies, a Malaysian-founded regional P2P or peer-to-peer financing online platform.
Yeah, indeed. So now this is interesting because you've got an incumbent, a conventional bank, partnering with its potential disruptor. So basically getting into bed with their competition.
The disruptor being the fintech phenomena.
Exactly. So a P2P, peer-to-peer, essentially this. If, let's say, you're an SME, you're wanting to go get loan. Again, I'm just using broad terms here. This is generally speaking, okay? If you're an SME, you want to get a loan, and perhaps you can't get it from the conventional banks, your commercial banks, then you go to these P2P financing platforms and you'll try to get financing from them. Now, if you recall, I had a breakfast grill with a Malaysian P2P platform called Fantastic. You can check it out on our website and our app as well, on our podcasts. And essentially, the concerns around P2P is this. If you as an SME are not able to get those loans from the banks because of your credit profile or other metrics that they use, based on how they assess your credit worthiness, that would imply that you're a riskier borrower. In other words, you may not be, or you may be vulnerable to, you know, actually defaulting on these kind of loans, or at least not servicing them as well, right? So then you go to this P2P. So with this kind of partnership, it's quite interesting to see, again, a conventional bank going with partnering with this P2P financing.
I mean, it's good that you mentioned SMEs, because just some numbers, Han, on the SMEs. SME contribution to the Malaysian GDP is expected to rise by 1 percentage point to 38% this year. And in fact, SMEs account for some 97% of all businesses in Malaysia. So it's an important, it's kind of a backbone to some extent of our economy.
And hence the need for financing is very, very pronounced in the SME sector as well, no doubt about that. But from a bank's perspective, right, do you want to be offering your loans or offering funds to these SMEs who are perhaps less credit worthy? Now, so in this partnership in particular between RHB and this P2P platform, they're going to offer three things. One, transaction banking services, two, trustee services, and three, and this is a key one, know your customer's services. So going back to the risk I spoke about, so it looks like RHB will step in and actually help funding societies with their know your customers, basically assess the credit profile or the credit risks associated with any SMEs that are applying for these loans.
Coming up, the news, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.